Hello, you're listening to the Bonded Books podcast, where we discuss books, fight over book boyfriends, and the lack of filter is a family trait. If you're lucky, you might even hear one of our dogs barking in the background. Because hey, if we have to deal with them, then so do you. We hope to dazzle you with our discussion while not being hurtful to the authors we feature. Success not guaranteed. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hey, kiddo.
Hi.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
I was waiting for your link to come through, and then I realized I wasn't at the top of my email.
Oh.
I was, you know me, I can't sit still. So I was like scrolling, trying to find things that I needed to delete and clean up my email a little bit. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm like coughing a lot, so I might have to mute myself a few times so I can cough or drink some water.
Boy. Okay, that's fine. Holy moly.
It's really annoying. I don't know what's going on with me. I don't know if it's allergies or... This seems to be what I always have struggles with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I remember before I even moved down here, I would talk to you on the phone, and there were certain times of the year where I'd be like, what's wrong with you? And you'd be like, wind, Santa Ana's, allergies. It was always something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's true.
You're fine. You're fine.
Yep.
So did your husband fill you in on all the details of yesterday? It was so exciting.
Oh my God. So he actually pulled into the driveway at the same time as me. And so we were both kind of getting out of our cars at the same time. So I'm about to get out of my car and I was like, hey, how'd it go? And he goes, oh, he's like, it's good. You want to see it? I brought it home with me. And he threw a plastic bag at me.
I hate men. Why are men such assholes all the time?
I screamed so loud.
Like, probably almost as loud as me when I found it.
Yeah, he immediately was like, don't kill me, don't kill me, it was a joke.
Tell him no sex for you for 3 months. Your punishment for such behavior.
Well, I'm like, you're just fucking lucky that you actually were joking. Because if this thing actually had what happened to you in it, I really probably would have killed him and buried him. I think I said something like, you're about to be as petrified as that rat.
Yes. So to let people know what happened, I have a strip of my side yard, which in this neighborhood, I have no idea why. It's everybody has one side of their house that's normal space in between them and their neighbor, and the other side is super narrow. It's like I can barely walk through there. It's maybe 2.5 feet or 3 feet if I'm lucky. So, of course, no matter what I do, there's grass growing up. And I looked and the grass was like maybe 3 feet tall on the side. I'm like, I can't. This is horrible. It's just going to spread, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to rip it out. I'm going to be ambitious, productive. I'm going to rip it all out and I'm going to spray a bunch of Roundup. I don't care if you're not supposed to use it or it's unhealthy for you. I'm over it. I've also been having problems with a rat that is running and crapping down the side of my house by my sliding glass door. I don't know what the hell. I can't get rid of it. I've tried things, traps, nothing. So I'm pulling this grass out and I'm like leaning against the house because I'm falling over as I'm trying to rip this 3.5 foot grass out. And I see what I think is a piece of the weed cloth that I had put down, which didn't work very well. And thank God I wear rubber gloves all the time when I work, because regular garden gloves are annoying to me. So I wear household dishwashing gloves. I don't care. They work great. If you're annoyed with gloves, you may want to try it. I go to pull another clump out, this freaking piece of what I think is the weed cloth. I look, it's a goddamn dead, flattened, petrified, dehydrated fucking rat that had touched my hand on more than one occasion. I screamed so loud, and obviously my neighbors don't give a shit what happens to me because I screamed like I was being murdered. And I ran out of there, tried to call you. You didn't answer your phone. Why? Hello. Why didn't you answer your phone?
I was making lunch when you called.
So what? This is important. How often do I call you? You don't have your phone?
I don't have my ringer on ever. So not like near it, I won't know that the phone's ringing.
Honey, why don't you have your ringer on?
I don't like phone ringers.
Oh my God. Well, you... Okay, so the whole reason I moved down here is because of my health concerns. So you are close by in case of an emergency. That was an emergency, not was a, you know, a run, a drill. You failed miserably.
Okay.
So you don't answer the phone. So I'm like, I'm going to try to call your husband because hopefully Jeff, God bless Jeff, loves me more apparently than you do and is more concerned about me. He didn't answer the phone, but he called me back in like 2 seconds and said, hey, what's going on? And I'm like, Jeff, is there any way you could come over and get this thing? Come pick up this dead rat and get rid of it for me. It was disgusting and vile, and I couldn't look at it. So God bless him. He came over and he got rid of the rat. But I do not approve of him faking you out like that. That, why do you, men always have to play these twisted little games? My big book boyfriend would never, ever in a million years pretend to throw a dead, dehydrated rat at me.
Right. This is why book boyfriends are better.
Yeah. And then men don't understand why they don't have more sex or women don't love them more. Stop being assholes. Right?
Yeah. It's okay. Gross.
Yeah, it is gross. So anyway, that was my horror of the day. Then I had to go back out there when he was done. I had to finish and I had to spray a crap ton of weed killer, which I never really liked to do. And I even was being so ambitious. I live in a house on a corner lot. So of course I have to do the side of the lot too, because the weeds are coming everywhere. And of course, what happens? It freaking rains here.
It actually rained a lot this morning.
I'm so mad.
I was surprised. Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding? I finally watered yesterday because my plants needed water. It never fails. And I sprayed a bunch of that stuff and then it rained. So anyway, loving life.
You might as well just washed the car. Would have gotten you the same raining results.
Yes. Yeah. But I don't give a shit about my car. I care about my garden, I guess. Right?
I don't really wash my car either, but I don't care about my garden. So there's that.
Yeah. Yes. You have an attitude. You need an attitude adjustment.
For what?
For your garden, I guess. I don't know.
No, I mean, the list, we don't have enough time in this podcast to list everything. So thank you for only picking one.
You're welcome. Oh my gosh. So do you want to talk about the book?
Yes. So today's book is Heart Song, A Gargoyle Monster Romance, War of the Underhill Book 2 by S.E. Wendell. And I just wanted to point out that book one, we had done in season two, season two, episode 25, that was Stone Hearts. And so this is a continuation of that story with different main characters.
Yes. And I believe we liked that book.
Yeah. And that book, the main characters were Karis and Gavriel. And I think in this book, they're Carrie and... is the man Gavin? I couldn't remember his name.
Yes. Yeah, Gavin.
Okay.
I only know that because my notes are open to his name.
Okay. So this book one was set a long time ago. And then it kind of travels through time. And so it goes from kind of a regular fantasy to now it's urban fantasy. So that book one ended kind of in the urban fantasy realm. And then this book picks up kind of where that book ended off. So this is fully urban fantasy for people who like that genre of books.
And don't you think you, to understand really what's happening in this book, you should read book one? Do you think that? I do.
Yes and no. So, yeah, I think you do. You get a better understanding of it. I really didn't remember that much about book one. And so it took me a while in reading this book to like make it click. Like, oh, yeah, that's what happened in book one that's playing out now in book two. So book one, we have the two main characters. The female had escaped this curse that befell the gargoyles, and she was alive. The other gargoyles were in this like stone sleep state. So her and her mate, in addition to their love story, the story ends with them kind of gathering up all the gargoyles that they can find throughout the world in order to get them all in one location to try to get them all out of the stone sleep. And so their plan, or what they're going to try next, which is what we see play out in this book, is they take all the gargoyles that they've collected, which we would just as humans think are statues, and they put them in a museum on display in the hopes that something about them being on display will wake them from this stone sleep. So the female main character in this book is an employee of the museum that those two characters own, and all the gargoyles statues in the museum on display, we know from book one, are real gargoyles.
Don't they put them on display so that they believe that a gargoyle's heart song, which is their mate, may, if they come across this person while they're going through the museum, it may help wake them up?
Yes. This gives the statues the best opportunity to have people near them to wake them from the stone sleep, which is what ends up happening in this book.
All right. So the girl that starts working at the museum with the gargoyle statues, her name is Anna Kincaid, and she's really happy that she got this job because she's finally going to get medical coverage. The benefits are amazing. And she suffers from debilitating migraines. So with this medical coverage, she could finally start keeping her appointments, pay for her medication. She's super happy to have this job.
Yes, and I remembered reading this book how I liked how the gargoyles are described in the last book, because here she talks about the Gwyneth collection. They're called the Gwyneth statues, which are the gargoyles. And so she's thinks of them as the Gwyneths.
And what do they call them? They don't call them gargoyles. Don't they call them grotesque?
Grotesque.
I'm like, yeah. I've never heard gargoyles referred to that. Were you aware of that? That was kind of surprising.
No, I haven't. I don't know why they called them that. Maybe I guess that's how they refer to the statues. But I think for the gargoyles themselves, they don't refer to themselves that way, I don't think.
Well, Anna refers to them that way, and I guess other people do too. And that the way they describe them, she says, many of them are monstrous with flashing fangs and bat-like wings. They look like demons, or what medieval Christians must have construed demons from. They had horns like rams. They had claws on their hands, talons on their feet. But perhaps the most remarkable thing about them was the very stone they were carved from, which I thought was interesting because they are different colors, aren't they? They're different colors depending on mm-hmm. the stone they, okay. All right.
Yeah, varieties of colors from gray to white to a few pinks. And so Karis, if we had read book one, if you did, she's mm-hmm. pink.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. But in this book, she's got a glamour, so she looks like a human. So, yeah, I do like how they're described. They sound pretty cool.
Okay.
And she refers to one of them as her grotesque because she's always drawn to him. Mm-hmm. And she describes him as being a dark slate gray with veins of white and gold running through him. And sometimes Anna wondered if it was real gold striating his chest and arms. The statue had been rendered as a creature readying to attack. So because they got frozen in this curse, whatever stance they were in when they were frozen is how they appear now. So some of them are just standing, some of them are sitting, some of them are lunging. So mm-hmm. it sounds really cool, actually. I would love to see this.
It does. It would be interesting to see if it were someplace we could actually go.
So Anna works at the museum. She works for Carrie and Gavin. And while she's there, there's a few regulars who appear in the book fairly often because they come to the museum a lot. And then there's one woman who shows up. Her name is June. Oh. And she's a doctor, right? And she's there to study the pieces or run some tests on them, I think.
Yes. But we don't know exactly. She's taking a bunch of notes and doing sketches. From the beginning, I'm like, what's up with this Anne person?
See, I was suspicious of June and all the regulars. So.
Isn't that what I said? Two. Did I say that?
You said
it.
You said Anne.
I'm so sorry. I meant June.
Okay.
Cut that. Yeah. Cut that out of there. Okay. Yes.
I think we're supposed to be suspicious of June because she's drawn to them. So in chapter two, it says, June drifted toward one of the bigger pieces. It was a male, tall and broad, hewn from what looked like granite. Not one of the flashier pieces, but many were drawn to him for his looks nonetheless. He too was in a battle pose, knees bent, claws and fangs flashing, but time hadn't been kind. One of his arms had been broken off at the elbow, and on the same side his horn was missing.
Oh yeah, I think that she's there to try to figure out if they can fix that, right?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But she's there to do something. And while she's there, the museum ends up getting robbed. All these men
crazy
in like tactical gear show up. So I'm like, oh, it's not suspicious. Like, it's not a coincidence that June is there while all this shit's happening. And some sort of mist starts coming out. And Anna starts to feel woozy and she kind of pushes June out the door and is like, run, save yourself. And in the process of trying to get out herself, I think she falls and she touches that statue she refers to as her grotesque.
She's trying to crouch behind him.
Mm-hmm. And this like makes him come to life. And he has blue-gray eyes and an inhuman face. And it says, those eyes took her in and something about him changed. His stance eased. His wings drooped infinitesimally.
Yeah, it's crazy. So these people are rappelling through the glass dome of the museum. So they're rappelling down these ropes. This mist or whatever it is starts happening, starts affecting her. And this gargoyle starts to come to life.
Mm-hmm. And he essentially picks her up. And it says, with a grumbling sound, he growled, mate.
Yeah.
And so he takes her out of the museum and flies off. And so they fly off and she directs him towards her apartment. And so now the book, for the most part, takes place in her apartment because this is where her gargoyle mate is staying with her. And he's so sweet, like instantly. Mm-hmm. He says things like, "I have longed to find you and look upon you, my Anna. It may have taken centuries, but I regret none of the many years it took to bring me to you."
Yes. And they say he's 6.5 feet tall and that each wing extended over twice as long. So this thing is gigantic. And Anna, of course, is terrified. And stress does trigger migraines for her. This is triggering a migraine.
Well, she suffers from migraines. So that's a persistent thing that happens in the book, that she gets the migraine. So I think she ends up taking some of her medication, which makes her sleepy. She goes to bed and then she wakes up the next morning, of course, thinking like, oh, that was just a weird dream. And then realizing, oh, this is not a dream. Like, this is real.
Yes, because he's in her apartment. They're hiding out in her apartment.
Mm-hmm. But for some reason, he's awake at night. But as soon as the sun starts to rise and it gets into the apartment, I don't know if it's like the sun landing on him or something, it freezes him back into his stone state.
Yeah, it was really sad. Because he's trying to woo her because it's his mate and she's freaked out by him. And then on top of it, he ends up turning back into stone during the day.
Yeah. So now we're getting a bunch of days sort of repeating themselves in the book where they only have the night that they can spend together. But Anna has to sleep at night because she's still trying to work during the day. And she really doesn't want to not work during the day because it would be really suspicious if this robbery happens. And he's not the only statue missing, by the way. And so she's like, I have to go to work, keep my job. I need the health insurance. We need the money. I don't want the cops to think I did something. But at the same time, he is stone all day, which I guess is fine that he's stone all day while she's gone anyways. But then he ends up spending a lot of time by himself in the apartment while she's sleeping at night.
And with her cat, who's named Captain. I like her his relationship with this cat. So he's like super overprotective of her. He does not want her to go back to her job. He wants to protect her. He wants to keep her in the apartment. She's trying to explain to him, I can't do that. I have financial obligations. I don't want the cops to think I was involved in this. And I need to go. And he tries to tell her that mist, when she describes it to him, he explains to her that that is fey magic. And fey magic is... Feys were... his enemy, right?
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, he doesn't want her to go. And so this is kind of an argument they have back and forth. But obviously, when he turns to stone, he can't actually stop her, right?
Yeah, he won't listen to her saying, "This, you can't run my life." He doesn't get it. He's just, all he knows is protecting her.
Yeah, he's lost a lot. You know, he lost all his family members because they're still frozen. Then he talks about how he's lost everything he's prepared or gathered for a mate. So the only thing he really has is her. And he doesn't know the nowadays stuff, right? He knows what happened centuries ago.
Right. He's totally out of touch with everything. He doesn't know how to cope in the new world yet.
But he does learn quickly because she shows him how to use the TV so he can watch documentaries and get brushed up on history. at one point, she shows him how to use a phone and a computer. And he kind of becomes like a house husband.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, it's hilarious. So he starts feeding the cat. He starts making dinner while he waits for her to come home from work and everything. I laughed when at one point she buys him clothes because, of course, he was only wearing pants. He doesn't wear a shirt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she's like, well, I can't get him jeans because he's got those taloned feet. So I'm going to get him, you know, one of the pairs of pants is going to be gray sweatpants.
Yeah. The other thing we learn about Anna, and this explained a lot of her behavior, I thought, and I totally could get her after reading what her life was like growing up. She grew up with her mother, whose name was Shannon, and Shannon was a horrible mother, and she did not really take care of Anna. She used Anna first to steal things because they needed food and they were alone, and to kind of explain to her that you have to do whatever you do. She's seen her mother go from one bad relationship to another. I think her mother was like married 5 times. I don't know. But her mother always thought a man was the answer. And Anna had been an eyewitness to one failed relationship after another. So Anna did not have anybody to rely on or depend on. So she grew up very closed and guarded and not willing to trust anybody because she just saw what happened with her mother. And even her own mother was using her. Her mother would still contact her for money.
I really didn't like her mom in this story.
Well, who would? I didn't like her mother either. She's horrible.
Yeah, you're not supposed to like the mom. But then also, it made me dislike Anna because I didn't like how she interacted with her mom. It's like, stop sending her money. Why are you enabling her? Like, you're not a child anymore. At some point, you have to set boundaries. So that kind of like bothered me because I didn't like the mom. And then I didn't like Anna because of the mom.
Yeah, see, I could forgive Anna a lot because I understand firsthand what that kind of damage does. And you still, no matter what, you want your parents to love you and accept you. And she only had her mother, for good or for bad. She only had her mother growing up. And so, yeah, her mother is a freaking loser. I wouldn't have sent her money, but I guess she couldn't have let her die in the street, you know?
Okay.
She had some boundaries. Not everybody has the same mental health. Not everyone was as fortunate as you to have me as a mother and show you how to set boundaries.
It's true. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. It's like she was a doormat for her mom, but then she was giving a lot of pushback for Frey, who is the gargoyle that, I don't know if we actually said that, but she was fighting with Frey a lot.
But like,
put some of that, put some of that pushback on your fucking mother.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's easier to do it to a stranger than it is to family members. I mean, come on, Rachel, look at my life.
Yeah.
I didn't finally push back till I was 64 years old. That's a lifetime of, you know, wanting to feel accepted. So I cut her a lot of slack. Oh, and also the other thing I think we forgot to mention, I don't know if you read this in the beginning of the book, but there's two things. One, there's a lot of words in the book and a language that is, we don't know what he's saying to her. He's speaking this other language. There is a reference in the back of the book that explains what all these words mean. So if you want to, as a reader, flip back and forth and kind of figure out what he's saying to her in this other language, that's the way that you could do it. Oh, and the other thing I was going to say is the author herself suffers from debilitating migraines and explains how much it impacted her life. So she wrote that into this story, into Anna's character. Okay. And also because all bad things happened to me, I had debilitating migraines that I used to have to get Demerol injections for and would knock me out for like 3 days. And I can relate to how much being sick or having these migraines can impact your life. So that's where this character's migraine information came from.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's good because a lot of people do get migraines, maybe not to the extent that this character does, but we can all kind of relate to how shitty they are and how they really, you have to kind of switch your whole schedule around for the day or
right.
They can really make a big impact.
Yes.
So I just have, for the most part, a lot of things I've highlighted in here from Frey because I thought he was adorable. At one point he takes some of her undergarments and
go ahead, I'm sorry.
He buried his nose in the fabric, drawing in a long draught of her scent. It calmed his mind and he couldn't help running the soft fabric in circles over his cheek, working a bit of her scent into his skin. That was hilarious.
It was hilarious because of this robbery. The police start showing up at her door and she makes him hide in her bedroom. He wants to defend her and she's like, no, get in my bedroom. And when the detective finally leaves and he comes walking out at one point, I look over and I wonder why he's clutching my undergarments. It's to calm him. I thought that was very funny.
Yes, and then he does a lot of, like, rumbling in the story. And I thought that was adorable. And at one point, he does finally wear a shirt, but he never buttons it, probably because he's got those talon claw things.
Right.
And she thinks about how he rolled up the sleeves of the flannel, and it wasn't okay. So I'm like, oh. She's looking at his forearms.
Mm-hmm. He's starting to think of ways that he can get her to fall in love with him because she doesn't understand the mating bond. No matter how many times he tries to explain it, she thinks that he would just bond to anybody. And he's like, no, that's not true. But she doesn't trust. She has very hard time with trusting. And so comes up with different ways to convince her that what he feels for her is real and they should be together. What else do you have in there?
Let's see. At one point, one of the guys that shows up at the museum, his name is Andrew Glendower. And Anna says, oh, like the Welsh rebel. And I knew right away this guy was the bad guy. He says he's a professor of ancient and early medieval pagan religious practices. In fact, ancient Celtic paganism, to be precise. And we find out later in the story that this guy is a druid. And so she's kind of working on her end with all the regulars at the museum, the cops that keep coming to do interviews. June starts showing up again and interacting with her and asking her some kind of pointed questions. At one point, June asks Anna, hey, like, did you see anything kind of weird the night that robbery happened? Because I swear I saw something huge fly away from the museum. And Anna kind of plays it off as like, I don't really remember how I got home. That mist was like poisoned or something, I think, because it was kind of affecting me. And I don't remember much. And so maybe like the mist was kind of affecting you too. And that's why you saw something.
Yeah, I thought it was a little annoying or stressful, I should say, because having read the first book, I knew that Gavin and Carrie's a gargoyle and Gavin is a fae. And she is they're each other's heart song. And I'm like, oh my God, if they would just talk to her. But, you know, Frey tells her that the Fae, a lot of stuff starts coming out. He starts talking to her about the Fae and what happened to his people, how the Fae were the enemy, and this gigantic war started happening, and all of the gargoyles, who were called guardians, were frozen in this statue state. And I think he was in his for 1,000 years. I mean, I just can't even imagine what it must be like for them. But being with the statues all gathered in the museum, they're able to, a lot of them are able to mind speak to each other.
This was kind of weird because they're, I mean, I guess it's kind of like when you're in a coma, because they say like people that are in a coma can still hear. So they suggest talking to them or reading them books or what have you, because Frey says that they can kind of talk to each other. He knew his other clans people and other people in the situation were around, but at the same time, he could kind of hear what was happening in the world, like the radio, and, you know, he could kind of be aware of what was happening around him, not just between the other gargoyles, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. And she doesn't understand, and Anna doesn't understand, and says to him, if I'm your heart song and they think the heart song can break the curse, why are you turning into a statue still in the daytime? But it's becoming less and less. And he explains to her, I think it's because you did not, we have not completely sealed the bond between us.
Right. So it's enough to wake him up, but it's not enough to break the curse completely, because they barely kiss. She's mm-hmm. not accepting for a lot of the book that he's her mate. They definitely don't have any sort of relations for a good portion of the book. And he explains to her,
wasn't it like 65% in the book before? It's a long time. There's a lot of fighting back and forth between them, which I didn't care for.
Well, yeah, I think it's about 65% into the book when they finally kiss.
Yeah.
And then we have days and days and weeks of nothing happening. This routine, it's a lot of the stuff that happens in this book is repetitive, and there is a lot of fighting, and there's a lot of crying on Anna's part.
Mm-hmm.
She's very emotional, and she cries all the time, constantly. So it's, yeah, it took forever for them to actually get together. He even tells to her, like, she does kind of question him. At one point, she says she doesn't want to talk about the mate thing. So they don't talk about it. They just kind of start becoming friends. And then they start talking about the mate thing again. And he says, you know, not all pairs are happy. A successful pairing takes work. And she says, well, so mating isn't about love. You don't have to love your mate. And he says, matehood is a choice. Those that work are by choice. He says, I will always choose you, my Anna. I will always care for you and provide for you, for that's what it is to be a mate. And he says, please let me be your mate.
Yeah. So he sets about proving to her by having dinner ready for her all the time, keeping the apartment clean. They play games at night in front of the television. He spends a lot of time holding her. And yeah, I would say it takes forever for them to finally start doing anything. But dear God, once they do, I think it's hotter than hell. What do you think?
I think by the time they finally started doing things, it didn't matter to me because I hated the female main character. So I actually skipped their sex scenes because I didn't care at that point.
That's bad, because they were really freaking hot. I'm like, holy crap, this guy, it makes up almost for it being 65% in. I don't like the fact that he's so controlling to the point where he doesn't want her to leave. And one night she has a migraine. She has to give herself a shot. He puts her to bed. He tucks her in. And he knows she's going to be furious with him, but he sits in front of the front door because he knows once he becomes a statue, she won't be able to move him and she won't be able to get out of the apartment. I would be livid. And of course she was too.
Yeah, but then I think it might have been the same night before. she gets home from work. She's in such a bad mood that she like barely eats dinner he cooked for her. And then she immediately goes to bed. I'm like, out of a 24-hour day, you probably only have 3 or 4 hours from when you get home from work to when you normally go to bed to spend with him. And now you're home for maybe 30 minutes. And then, and she kept getting mad. He kept getting mad at her also, because she would never tell him anything ever. Like she would be late coming home from work and he would be worried about her. She's like, oh, I stopped at the grocery store. And then one time she's like, oh, I had a doctor's appointment, so I went to do that. And he's like, you're not telling me anything, so I'm sitting here waiting for you. Can't leave the fucking house to look for you. I don't know where you are. I tell you I'm worried about you going to work because of all the dangerous Faye, and you're not helping the situation by never communicating. And she's like, oh, like, I'm just not used to having, like, someone to tell, like, where I'm coming and going. It's like, at this point, you've been living with this guy for, like, a month, probably. Like, you're so selfish. You don't think to tell him, hey, like, I have to do such and such after work. Like, come on.
Well, eventually she does get it. It takes way too long for her to get it. And so she gets him a phone so he can text her, right? And she starts showing him how to use the computer. She gets that she has to start letting him become part of her life more. It's just common courtesy at this point. He's also worried about her because there's a black SUV that keeps following her, hanging out in front of her house. They don't know who it is. She thinks it's the detective that, you know, they're going to find out there's a door girl statue in her apartment. Even though, how the hell would she have ever gotten it there? I'm surprised it didn't break through the floor of her apartment. But yeah, eventually she starts letting him in.
Yeah, I had really struggled with this book because I didn't like Anna. I liked her at first, but her constant fighting with Frey, and then she cried all the time. So her always like being a bitch who didn't communicate, but then she's also crying constantly and like playing the victim. I really struggled with her. So then, like I'm saying, literally at one point, my note is she's kind of a bitch. And my other note later on in the book is she doesn't deserve a mate. That's how annoyed I was with her.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a struggle for the two of them to come to an understanding and to get to the point where they are together. Right.
Yeah. And I think I'm trying to double check how many pages this book was.
A lot.
393 pages. So the book is almost 400 pages long. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was stuff we didn't need. A lot.
So I agree. Yeah. I feel like with that.
Yeah. Maybe if some of that stuff hadn't happened, then, you know, I wouldn't have disliked her so much.
Okay, so do you just want to start pointing out things and then we'll, you know, give our 2 cents about the book or what?
I still have a couple things highlighted.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so at one point, they start finally doing stuff together. But of course, it's like early morning. And so while they're doing stuff, he turns back into a stone statue. And like, it's she's like an interesting character because like they don't do anything. They don't kiss until like 65 something percent in, I don't think. Then when they finally do start doing stuff, he turns into a stone statue. She is kind of like freaky deaky. So she like pleasures herself near him because she's like, oh, well, he has this awareness and consciousness when he's in his stone state. So she's like kind of messing with him.
Yeah, she's totally messing with him. She's like, I don't know if he can tell what's going on, but let's try it anyway. So she's touching herself. She's, you know, putting her sex right in his face. It's crazy, I think.
And it really was.
Yeah, and I feel bad for him because he can tell what's going on.
Well, and then, like, I don't know, like, we don't use this word really that often here. So maybe this author is from another country and they use this word, but she refers to herself, her lady parts, as the see you next Tuesday. The C-U-N-T, yeah. That's what she called her. That really threw me.
Really?
Well, I'm just like, that is very crass. I'm just not, they don't usually, like, it's not usually what it's referred to in books, I don't feel like.
Well, see,
or at
I
least
felt
by the female main character.
By the female, yes. That I absolutely agree with. I don't like that word either, but I think we've already discussed at other in other podcasts the fact that there's, I don't think there is a nice word for a female anatomy. You know, they're all kind of crass. But yeah, the male character a lot of times will say, oh, I'm going to fill your see you next Tuesday till you can't walk. I mean, but for a woman to address herself that way, I think I did have a moment of, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So now that's every time her lady bits are referred to, it's that.
Mm-hmm.
But then it made me laugh because that's how that's referred to. But then it's also referred to as clitoris instead of clit. I'm like, you're using slang for one thing, but you're not using slang for the other thing. That was kind of weird to me.
Well, I thought it was interesting that someone actually used the proper terminology. Yeah, I noticed that too, but I just thought, oh, that's kind of different. That's all I thought.
Yeah. No, that's why it stood out to me, because it was so different. At one point, Frey says, you are the sweetest pain, my Anna. Oh, he's so sweet.
Yeah.
And yeah, Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, this made me laugh. At one point, she's trying to think, why isn't the curse breaking? And she thinks, was that it? True love's kiss? Or was it a bit more X-rated than Disney? Would sex finally break the curse?
I'd be game to find out. She also struggles with feeling like she's not worthy because of the damage that's been done to her by her mother growing up. I think she suffers a lot with not feeling worthy of love. So she thinks, oh, he really should find somebody else because I'm not going to be able to give him what he wants.
Yes, correct.
Okay, all right. She tells him, I have to keep working at the museum because we have to help your people. Now that I know all these other statues are frozen gargoyles, we have to figure out what's going on and how to save them. She doesn't know what to think about Gavin and Carrie. And then one day she finds a listening device on her computer and she's livid. And even though she needs this job and she needs medical coverage, she rips the listening device off the computer, storms into Carrie's office and tells her, I quit. I can't believe you put this listening device on my computer. She's livid. And so she goes storming out of the door. There's so many things happening with, she can't trust Carrie. She's worried about the detectives. She's being followed by this black SUV. She's afraid she's going to get nabbed off the street before she can get home to Frey, because she realizes Frey is going to protect her. And I love when she does get nabbed off the street. Did you like that part? No, you're going to say no.
Well, but why did you love it? It's just the way you said it is funny.
Well, because she gets nabbed into the black SUV finally, and it's not the detective doing surveillance on her. It's that professor who's the druid. He's an evil guy, and he tells her, I need to have a conversation with Frey. I know he's in your apartment. I need to speak to him. And she's like, she's never going to say, she thinks to herself, I'm never going to betray him. I'm not going to do anything this guy wants me to do. So don't they end up, they call Frey from the car and she yells out. I love the fact that she yells out enough for him to know, and she just yells out black SUV. And not even five seconds between her saying that, bam, he's landing on the hood of the, he has stayed in the apartment this whole time, but now she's in danger and he doesn't give a shit. He's going to be there and he's going to attack. He attacks the car. He rips the door off. He throws the guys that are in there, because they're holding a gun to her head. He throws the guy up against a building. He's out of his mind because his mate is being threatened. I like that part. You didn't like it?
Oh, no, I like that part. Yeah, okay. I like when he's like, now his overprotectiveness is sexy, right? His overprotectiveness, yeah. He's saying, you can't go to work, is annoying. But now when she actually needs it, it's hot.
Yeah, because she actually is in danger.
Right. So this guy ends up saying, I'm Andrew Glendower of the Silurus Pretani. My line is as ancient as yours, and through it, we have kept the old ways alive. I have studied the arcane arts, and just like our ancestors, I'm ready to stand side by side with guardians to defend what is ours. So he says, Frey says, you wish to wake the guardians. And this guy, Andrew, says, yes, we will rise again. So essentially, he's a druid. He wants to wake up all the guardians. He wants to use the guardians to overthrow society, I guess, in order to get back to the way things used to be. That's kind of his evil montage dialogue plan.
Yeah, and he says, let's go up to your apartment so we can chat. And when they're up there chatting, he explains that I can help you, but you need to put this collar on. It's all kind of bizarre. And Frey's like, no, I'm not putting some collar on. So all of a sudden he calls this other guy in, who turns out it's a gargoyle who's awake, whose name is Dragon. Right?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And it's his friend, but he's under the control of this professor, this druid. And so they start fighting in the apartment because, you know, they're trying to get this collar around Frey's neck. And Dragon, even though he doesn't want to have this fight with him because he's under the guy's control, he's fighting with him and trying to get the collar around his neck.
Yes, so they're fighting. This is when Carrie shows up with her mate. Now you can see that she's not actually a human. They're using magic. They kind of save the day. She says, Anna's an innocent. And that, you know, I think this guy like goes off, or...
He's crazy.
How does that guy end up leaving, right?
He does end up leaving. They tell him to get out. The Fae, Gavin, has a magic fight with this professor, with Glendower.
Okay. And then Carrie and her mate take Anna and Frey kind of to their mansion complex thing. They all kind of live together. They do clan shit together. And they figure out a way to get a glamour for Frey, so that way he can come out of the house at night, or during the day, excuse me. And now he works as a security guard at the museum.
Yes, because now the bond has snapped into place, because Anna has accepted him as her mate. She loves him. They have sex. It's great. And so the curse is broken for him.
Well, yeah. Anna's really freaky deaky. She's a big fan of toys and doing things anywhere and everywhere. So that was one redeeming quality for her.
Yeah, I'm like, you go, girl. Now that you know it's safe to open your heart to this guy, you take all the happiness your little body can handle.
Yeah, and in the epilogue, June is kind of I think she's in her apartment. She's talking to somebody.
Right. Yes.
And I mean, I knew this had happened. As soon as she started questioning, did you see something happen? Oh. Like, I saw something. I was like, oh, the second gargoyle that disappeared went with June. Because sure enough, at the epilogue, it says, I think it's time you take me there. And that's said by a gargoyle. And she responds, yeah, I guess you're right. And that's how the book ends.
Yeah, see, I didn't understand. I thought the fae that broke through the roof of the museum had kidnapped the guy. But it's really her mate, her heart song, right?
Yeah, I am actually kind of confused by that.
Okay.
Where? Because only two were missing, right?
Yeah.
But now there's three out there. There's Frey, Alaric, and Dragon. Mm-hmm. So which one was the second one that came out of the museum? Was that Dragon who got collared, or was that Alaric who's with June? I'm assuming it's Alaric with June. Because otherwise, would he meet up?
Well, then the Frey broke into the museum for nothing. And what about the guy with the missing arm? I thought that's her mate, and that the fae took Dragon. But I honestly don't know, because you're right. Only two disappeared from the museum. I don't know, Rachel.
Yeah.
It's all a mystery to me.
Okay. Well, do you want to give it your rating?
Sure. I'll give it my rating. I will say I didn't like this book as much as I liked the first book, because I think it was too long, and I think there was just way too much fighting. There was a lot of stuff that I did enjoy in this book. I enjoyed the background on Anna to understand and have more. For me, I gave her a lot more sympathy, because I know how things can fuck up your life and affect your relationships. I think if the author had just edited a lot of what was going down there, the book would have been better. I waited forever for them to get together. But once they got together, for me, it was super, super hot. I only wish they had started sooner so that I could have enjoyed that part more. So I probably would give this book 3 wet panties.
Okay. I would probably give it 2, because it was very long. It was almost 400 pages long. A lot of it was repetitive. A lot of it was them fighting, all of these things, the same arguments for the same issues. I didn't like how much she cried. I ended up searching at one point how many times the word cry and the word tear was used in the book. And it's a lot. So
I'm afraid.
Tear in some sort of variety, any variety of tear, was used 55 times in the book.
I didn't even that's really a lot notice it that book. Much. Yeah, I guess she was constantly.
She's always tearing up, you know, and then she's like trying not to cry. She's trying to hold back her tears. It was just a lot. So then when I got to the point where she was bothering me, and I have this problem with books in general. If I don't like the female main character, I usually don't like the book. I'm like harder on the female main character than I am on the male character for some reason. So like, if the guy's an asshole, he can redeem himself and I'm more forgiving. But I got turned off by her before they even hooked up. So yes, them hooking up was hot, but then I was just still annoyed with her. So I would give it probably 2 wet panties, like, just because you're saying those scenes were pretty hot. And I did really like Frey. He's super sweet. I loved how he's always talking to her. I can understand him being like overbearing and protective. I didn't hate it. It was, you know, he was trying the best he could, I felt like. So at some points he did piss me off, like when he blocked the door.
Oh my God. Yeah. Sometimes it was just, he was too much for me. And maybe he was just too much of a cinnamon roll for me. It's like if he called her my Anna one more time, I probably was going to scream.
So like even the day that he blocks the door, she gets really pissed off because she's like, this is the day I have to go on my lunch break to get my MRI.
Oh yeah.
So I have. But she even thinks, well, he wouldn't know that because I never told him. It's like, well, fuck, like, you're even admitting to yourself, you're never communicating with him. What do you fucking expect?
And isn't it horrible when people don't communicate and let you know what's going on? And let you in. Yes, I could. I find it so ironic that that just put their buttons for you. I just found out yesterday that you're going on vacation next month. I didn't even know it. What the fuck?
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Try to keep Anna and how much it annoyed you in the back of your mind forever, will you?
Maybe I was feeling a little called out subconsciously.
Yeah, maybe. Oh my God. That is the funniest thing. That is hilarious. Okay.
Anyways, all right.
Me. So you still, would you recommend this book or not?
No. Mm. Unfortunately. This one was just a miss for me, but this author has done books that I've really liked.
I agree. Yes.
Yeah, just not this book, but I really liked, I can't remember the name of the series. I'm trying to look it up.
Feel free. Go right ahead. I'll play some music in my mind while you're doing that. Yeah, it's hard when you have something that you enjoy an author and then, but you know, that stuff happens.
Oh, okay. So the duet that I loved by this author was Broken Wings Duet.
Okay.
So I really liked that book series. It was only two stories, but so she has done things that I've really liked. I'm just not this one. This one kind of was not doing it for me.
Yeah, I was a pretty bummed because I really liked the first book a lot. And I think with some editing, this book could have been really, really good follow up to the first book. I may or may not read the next book just because it may be a hit or a miss. I don't know. You know, like maybe the first book was really good. The second book was a little too long. It could have been edited. And then the third book will be really good. I don't know. But I like the storyline. I like what's happening in this book.
Yeah, that part's interesting. So, yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe we'll see about the next one. But is there anything else that you've been reading that you want to mention?
I did read Alyssa Thorne's Bologna, The Lost Goddess. And
okay.
I really, really like that book. I think I gave it 4.5 stars on Goodreads. I liked it way better than the first book. There was a lot more action. I liked the fact that she was a very dominant character. I liked the fact that the guy was a hot Italian. She lives in Italy. Italian men are hot. We all know that. And then I wonder if there's anything else I read. I ended up returning the Stephen King book. I skimmed it, The Tommyknockers, way too long. Reminded me of why I stopped reading Stephen King. He just got way too wordy. What about you? Is there anything else that you've read?
I read, I'm trying to remember where I left off what I mentioned the last time. So I also read Bologna, The Lost Goddesses. I gave that 5 stars. It's no surprise. I really like Alyssa Thorne, and that book I really enjoyed. Some books I like more than others. That one was really good, in my opinion.
I agree, but I give very few people 5 stars. So 4 stars for me is really a 5-star book.
Okay. And then I also read a couple books by Lexi C. Foss that she co-authored with J.R. Thorne. This series, not all the books are out yet, but I read the first 3 books, the ones that are out. It's a reverse harem, actually, which I haven't read in a really long time. But those books were Hell Fey Captive, Hell Fey Warden, and Hell Fey Commander. And those are pretty good. And otherwise, I haven't really been reading. I've been listening to a few audiobooks, though. I was listening to an audiobook by Zoe Ashwood. It was Her Orc Guardian. I haven't finished that yet, but I do like that series. I like her, and I really like the narrator that does her audiobooks. He's a really good narrator, I feel like. And then another audiobook I started, which I'm really liking, and this has a female narrator and a male narrator.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So I've read this series. I love this series, but I'm just now listening to the audiobooks just to have something to listen to. So okay. The book is An Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir. That's a really good fantasy book series.
Oh, okay. I'll check that out. Yeah, I forgot I'm listening to J.R. Ward's Lover Unveiled, which is an audiobook, which I really like the guy that narrates that book. He's like the perfect guy to narrate her. I think he narrates all her books. It's not like she switches back and forth. And I found that audiobook on Spotify, which I was surprised. I'm like, oh, why didn't I look at these, you know, why didn't I look at these audiobooks sooner?
Oh, so that's, let me see on my holds.
What was that book called? An Amber in what?
An Ember. E-M-B-E-R.
Oh. Okay.
In the Ashes. That is, let me look it up, because I can't remember if that's technically a young adult series or not. Let me see. Oh, it's interesting that Amazon now does this where it will tell you when you purchased something. So I purchased this book in 2015. So I read this book
a
long time ago.
Wow. Yeah. When did it come out?
So it came out in April 2015, and I purchased it in October 2015.
Oh, funny.
So it's a young adult fantasy series. Really good, though. Highly recommend.
Okay. I will check it out. I've, like, a couple of books that I've read recently were young adults. I usually don't like young adult because I'm an old lady, and they were really good. So I'm willing to be a little more open now, I guess.
I think for me, if it's a fantasy book, it doesn't matter to me if it's adult or young adult. But if it's a romance, like if the plot is mostly romance, I don't want it to be young adult, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it.
So, okay, and then let me go on my Kindle again. Let me look up what the next book is that we're doing. The next book is an author that we've featured recently on the podcast, but this is a totally different series by her. The book is The Faceless Madge by Kenley Davidson.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to discussing that with you.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do for the rest of the day? Recharge?
I have some errands to run and some stuff to get together because the youngest leaves for sixth grade camp tomorrow.
Yeah, that's exciting. I still remember. I'm old, and I still remember going to sixth grade camp, and I loved it.
Yeah, this camp is pretty nice, too. So, yeah, we got to get her all packed and situated so we can drop her off tomorrow morning at the school so she can go.
Yeah, I remember when I came back, I was crying on the bus because I was so sad I was leaving. And your mother picked me up. She's like, why are you crying? And I'm like, because I didn't want to come back. Oh, God. No wonder your grandmother hated me. Jesus.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, what can I say? You know, it's not my fault. I blame them. Yeah. All right. That's so funny. I think I'm going to try to find a watch shop because I have like five watches. All the batteries are dead in every one of my watches. I do like to wear a watch. I'm old school. I don't have my cell phone ready in my hand at every second of the day, and I like to know what time it is. So I prefer to just look down at my wrist and call me old school, but that's fine.
Okay. Well, good luck. I'm sure you'll find something.
Good luck to you. I'm sure I will. All right, babe. You have a great day.
I'll talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to the Bonded Books Podcast. You can rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Our email is bondedbookspodcast@gmail.com. And check the show notes for a link to all of our social media.